which brings to mind another teaching of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, or rather his exposition of a philosophical schism within the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. It's a very important philosophical question, which is also a similar question that's caused much divergence of opinion in the Christian world also. In Christianity, the problem appears, the theological question appears as the question of the superiority of the path of works or the path of faith. Proponents of the path of faith say you just have to believe in Jesus, and that's all. Jesus will be with you. You don't have to do anything. And the proponents of the path of works say that, no, it's not just enough to say I believe, you have to do something. You have to pray and perform austerities and do good things to people, and in this way you get the things of God. But those on the who say they're on the path of faith say, no, you don't have to do anything. You can do any damn nonsense you want. You can just say I believe in Jesus. And they say that people who think you have to do anything to get the grace of God, they say they have insufficient faith. So this is similar to the controversy in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Sampradaya coming from Ramanujacharya, in which there are the proponents of Marakata Nyai, or monkey logic, and there are the followers of Marjara Nyai, which means cat logic. I'll explain them. So the followers of Marjara Nyai say that a devotee, he should simply be like a kitten. Just as the kitten doesn't make any endeavor, but simply the mother comes and picks up the kitten by the back of the neck and takes him away. Have you seen something? The cat picks up the kitten by the back of its neck and takes it here and there. So they say this would be the position of the devotee. Simply, his relationship with God is established, and he just leaves everything else up to God. He doesn't make any effort. So they say that you simply have to surrender once to the Lord, and you live without Him. This is based on a statement of Lord Ram in the Ramayana. This verse was. He said that Sukadeva Pratanda Yastavasi Gita Yachate Abhayam Sarvata Tatsmai Vidamri Tamivatam Mana. He said that if anyone even once surrenders to me, I award him fearlessness forever. This is my Dhamma. This was spoken by Lord Ram when Vibhishana came to surrender to him. Lord Ram was on the shores of Bharat in India, preparing to cross over to Lanka. When Vibhishana, the brother of Ravana, came and said, I'm coming to join you. So the members of Ravana's army, which mostly consisted of monkeys and bears, they were very suspicious of Vibhishana. How can you trust him? He comes from the enemy side. And they wanted to, some were even recommending to kill him on the spot. But Ram, he spoke this verse. If anyone wants to surrender to me, I award him fearlessness. He should join him by being in bold trust. Said to the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, who say that, well, you have to earn the mercy of the Lord. You have to follow the path of the yoga, by which you can gradually become purified. And then by such purification, your surrender will be fully meaningful. So this group, they gave the example of the monkey, baby monkey, who did not have certain dosaka, but the baby, they've seen the monkeys with the baby monkey. Those are from the India.
Yeah.
In the zoo?
Yeah.
In the zoo. So the mother runs along on her two hands and two legs. And the baby is hanging on underneath her. So the mother is looking to suddenly take care of the baby, but the baby has to make his own effort also. So this, on this point of philosophy, the whole Sri Sampradaya is split in two. And two different Bhagavad Gita and Anandavani. They have different tilak and different procedures of worship, and so, of course they have other differences. Santosa, he said that, well, our understanding is a little different from both of them. He said our understanding is like someone who's fallen in a well, and then someone has to throw him a rope. Then he grabs the rope, which is like the mercy of the Lord coming down to the disciple succession. So holding on to the rope, he has to make his effort to come up out of the well. And then when he comes out of the well, then he doesn't hold on, but he can move freely. So it's closer to the Markatanyai, the logic of the Nambi. But there are some subtle differences also, especially that point that his relationship is, in the beginning there's a great distance between the Savior and the saved. But once he's saved and out of the well, he can move as freely as the person who saved him. So this has many subtle points. But we understand that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was constantly speaking about philosophy. Our own Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was also constantly speaking philosophy. And constantly speaking from Shastra. It was the duty of the Mahārāja to instill in his disciples the philosophical understanding from Shastra. And especially at that time, not so much India now, but in those days, I mean, traditionally India was a land of philosophical discussion. Philosophy was considered central to life. It was considered far more important. Just like nowadays you see people read the newspapers and they worry about the elections in America and politics and this and that. Or they take a lot of interest in who's going to get more medals in the Olympic Games or who's going to win the World Cup soccer. It's considered, it's a very important part of modern culture. Even now in Britain, and at least in one university, they offer degrees in football studies. You know how to play football, but they just study it as a subject, its sociological impact, and so on. Because it's an important part of life in most of the world, much of the great world. People earn literally millions of dollars for their ability to kick a ball and play a good football. So, in the same way, previously in India, philosophy was considered important. And people, in general, they were, of course not everybody was a great philosopher, but people knew the stories and the philosophical implications, at least to some extent, of the Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Srimad Bhagavatam, especially. So if you want to preach and establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have to be very astute and philosophical. Even nowadays in South India, sometimes you're just going on the street and someone stops, recites a Sanskrit verse from the Upanishads and says, what is your understanding of this? So an acharya, especially in those days, that he was expected to be, he had to be vastly learned in Shastra and to be able to explain so many subtle intricacies of Shastra. And not only explain, but repeat the misconception. Now, as I explained yesterday, at that time the intelligentsia in India, they were also already by that time much steeped in Western ideas. So many of them more modern people, they weren't so much interested in hearing from Shastra. And in fact they had many, they imbibed many Western blasphemous ideas of Shastra narration. So to preach in this ethos, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also had to be very learned in Western ideas. And in fact he was blasphemous. He was known as a walking encyclopedia. It said that anyone could discuss with him on any topic, and he could discuss with him. As a young man, he never actually finished college. He dropped out early, which was practically unheard of in those days in England, to do such a thing. But his elder brother, Kamala Prasad, had some, had previously been in the pay of the kings of Tripura.
In the pay?
In the pay means his pagan.
Mm.
Tripura at that time was a kingdom east of Bengal. It's now a small independent state. The kings of Tripura were traditionally, since the time of Narottam Das Thakur, Vaishnavs, and they were very wealthy and they were sponsors of Vaishnavs. So Bhakti Sansasar Thakur was given the job of educating the sons of the kings of Tripura. And later he, being posted in Calcutta, he unearthed or he exposed much corruption that was going on among the office bearers of the kings of Tripura. So, but after some time he left that because he wanted to pursue a fully spiritual life. But the kings of Tripura, the kings mean that one and then he died and then mentioned it took over. So he was so satisfied with Bhaktisthanta's service that he did. Even as a young man, he gave him a pension for life, which Saraswati Thakur accepted for some time and then he accepted. So anyway, while he was at the college, he hardly studied the syllabus, but he most of the time studied and reading so many different books of men. And also, when he was in the pay of the kings of Tripura, he also took advantage of their vast land and read so many books. And he was very intelligent. He was a Shukida, means he remembered whatever he learned from him. The photo of him as a young boy, in which you can see the man, his head is very large in relationship to the rest of his body, his big brain. As a young man, after finishing his so many secular studies, then he made a thorough study of the philosophies of India, the spiritual philosophies of India. He even studied Mayavada in great detail. He spent some time in Puri at the Govardhan Mat, which is the eastern headquarters of the Shankaracharya Sampradaya. And he spent so much time with the Madhusudan Tirtha, who was the incumbent Shankaracharya, that he spent so much time with him that some people thought he was going to become a Mayavadi, put him in office. The Sangha said, Putin is the incumbent. In this way he had a, of course he read so many Gaudiya Vaishnava books and such. From his childhood he was trained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in assisting Bhaktivinoda in writing, proofreading, editing. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very interested in utilizing the printing press for publishing books about Krishna consciousness. So he trained his young son, Vimala Prasad, in all these activities. So much so that Vimala, he even knew how to work the machine, and even if it went wrong, he knew how to repair it. He used to say, Bhaktisthanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that, my father trained me in proofreading, but I don't only proofread essays. He said I proofread people also. I proofread religions. If there's any mistake, I find it out and correct it. He said I appear in the Karkata Lagna, which means the sign of the crown.
Means the zodiac.
Astrological sign of the crown. If there's anything wrong, I'll catch it in my princess. So like this, he was very excruciating in philosophy. Very fine, getting into fine details, almost to the point of pinpoint.
Mm.
And he gave many original viewpoints on Shastric understanding. He would often speak for 2 hours or 3 hours at a time. And those who heard him, they said that you always heard so many new ideas and so many different realizations coming home. The devotees who heard him, they felt that We heard it for so many years, and every time we hear it, so many wonderful things. However, his manner of speaking, that means the language he used, was often very difficult. Whether he spoke in English or generally he spoke in Bengali. But his style of Bengali was quite unusual. No one ever spoke or wrote like that before. It was very tough, Sanskritized language. And practically, not just terminology, but in Sanskrit there are many words. You can join together several words in one word. And normally that wouldn't be used in Bengali, but he would use such things right in Bengali. Sometimes you'll see in his writing that one whole line, one word takes up practically one line. So unless someone had some understanding of Sanskrit and philosophy, it would be very difficult for them to understand it. Because he would use technical philosophical terms. So actually it's very difficult for most people to understand it, unless they were highly educated. Even Prabhupada himself, he said, when I heard Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I didn't understand what he was saying, but when I'm listening to him, of course we know that Prabhupada certainly understood what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying. Because he also said that because I was a good listener, therefore I am now a good speaker. Because I heard nicely, I can now preach nicely. But on the other hand, Prabhupada is making the point that his style of speaking is very difficult to understand. So after his lectures, often the devotees, they would go to some of the senior devotees and say, what did he say? They listen to the whole lecture and afterwards they have to ask, what did he say? Some of the novel philosophical insights he gave on his, or explanations he gave on his poems.
Novel is new?
Yeah. One explanation by Nityananda Prabhu wrote Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sanyas Tanda, Sanyas Rod. That is described in Chaitanya Bhagavad, especially in detail. That shortly after taking Sanyas, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling from Bengal to Puri, he handed Nityananda Prabhu his Sanyas Rod and said, here, look after this, I'm going to bathe in the river. So Nityananda, after that, then he broke it and pulled it in three pieces and threw it in. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the bath, Nityananda Prabhu broke it into three pieces and threw it in the river. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later asked for it, he said, where's my Dhamma? So Nityananda said, well, when you were in ecstasy, you fell on it and broke it, so he threw it away. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't believe him and he was very angry. Think of it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very angry and he said, okay, I'm leaving you guys. I'm going ahead of you to come behind you. I'm not staying with you, a bunch of thugs. So no travelers had attempted to give any explanation of this until Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In which he said, one thing is that Nityananda, he didn't like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having an Ekadanda or a single sannyas rod in Mayavada. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastime, accepted sannyas from Keshav Bharati, who was officially a Mayavada. So Nityananda Prabhu wrote it in the truth, made it a two dhamma for other nation. And then he threw it in. Because he thought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is more than any sannyasi. He is the goal of life of those who are in the Paramahamsa state, which is even above sannyasi. So he thought it inappropriate that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had any dhamma at all, and therefore he threw it away. Another interesting insight about Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Radha Bhava Deshe Prabhu Hoyo Sri Murti Dure Nityananda Deti Pava Nishkiti, in which is described that becoming absorbed in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually took her form. And seeing this, Nityananda Prabhu offered prayers from a distance. So Bhagavad Gita describes in this report that Nityananda Prabhu, anadikari, because he doesn't have the qualification to come close to Radharani, therefore he has to be offered first from a distance. Because Balaram doesn't come close to Radharani. Oh. Vasavichara, discussion, esoteric topic of understanding of the intimate exchanges between various divinities of Krishna. He is Krishna, but he is also separate from Krishna, and somewhat different route to Krishna. And Radharani is the internal potency of Krishna, and they're both extremely dear to Krishna. But as a matter of lila, they cannot mix. Because as the elder brother of Krishna, Balaram, his presence in Radharani's day would be a disturbance to Krishna's enjoyment. So Radharani and Balaram respect each other, but they don't come into the association. So on this basis, Bhaktivinoda Thakura described why that word is endured, why from a distance. Another important understanding that Bhaktisthana Sarasvati gave was about the pastime of Yudhishthira's chariot coming down to the ground. That's described in Mahabharata, that Yudhishthira's chariot used to travel just slightly above the ground, because he was so pious that his chariot, and that was some mystic city given by the demigods. He's so pious that his chariot just would move above the ground. Now, before the battle of Kurukshetra began, Yudhishthira Maharaj, just before it began, he left his army and he walked to the other side and met the commanders of the Kaurava army. So everybody was wondering, what's he doing? Trying to make a peace settlement at this hour? Is it possible? But Yudhishthira, being a most cultured king, he was going to his superiors to ask them for their blessing. Before you undertake any serious endeavor, you should seek the blessings of your gurus to report them to fight. And Dronacharya's son, Ashvatthama, although he was about the same age as the Pandavas, he was also like a guru in as much as he was a Brahmin, like caste. One by one he asked them for blessings, and then he asked them, please tell me how we can kill you. When they come to fight against the guru, so they're asking the gurus, how can we kill you? And Lorna said, yes, we're offering you full blessings. And he said, but I can only be killed only if my son Ashvatthama is killed. Only then I'll have a disappointment. Will I be able to be killed? So I went to Ashvatthama and asked for blessings, which Ashvatthama not so happy with it. And he asked, well, how can you be killed? And Ashvatthama said, you can't kill me. So at the end of his battle, I'm still going to be around. Which is true, he's still alive. Before, he happened in the Himalayas. So anyway, during the battle, after Bhishma fell, he didn't die, but he fell, and he wasn't able to fight anymore, then the next commander-in-chief of the Kauravas became Dronacharya. And Duryodhana got him really in the mood for fighting. Mm. Yeah, he goaded him into fighting. He said, I know you, Drona, you actually want the Pandavas to win. And like this, he insulted him so much. So Drona went out and he was like fire and he was killing the Pandavas, soldiers, thousands and thousands. And it seemed like in one day he was going to just completely finish off the whole Pandava army. So Krishna was thinking, well, what to do? The only way we can kill Drona is if out of disappointment he hears that Ashvatthama has been killed. If he hears that Ashvatthama has been killed, then out of disappointment he'll lose his enthusiasm to fight and then he can be killed. But we can't kill Ashvatthama, he's too powerful. So Krishna devised a trick. You should call out in the presence of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama is killed. Yudhishthira said, well, why don't you say to Krishna? So why have I never told a lie in my life? Krishna said, I know. That's why I want you to say it. Because if anyone else says it, Drona won't believe it. The only person you will believe is you. He has full faith that you will never have a lie. And he says, I can't have it all the way in my life. Krishna said, hey, you know, we're in the middle of a war here, you know. You have to do it. And still Yudhishthira was reluctant. So Krishna said, hey, look, I'll tell you what we're doing. He said, in our army, we have an elephant called Ashvatthama. So we'll kill him. And you call out, Ashvatthama, the elephant, is dead. And when you say the elephant, I will blow on my conch so no one can hear it. So Yudhishthira said, okay. Ashvatthama hata iti gajja. So he called out. And in the meantime, Drona heard, he became totally disappointed. And then Dhrishtadyumna, who had been born for the sake of killing him, killed him. But after this, Yudhishthira's chariot came boom, down in the mountain. Because he's coming up, his spotless character had been spoiled. That's what the Kami commentators say. But Bhakti Sansata Thakur said, the reason he came down was because he hesitated, he didn't want to follow the order of Krishna. Therefore he lost his kingdom. Another story from the Mahabharata concerns the time when the Pandavas were young boys and they were studying fighting from the use of weapons from Drona Acharya, in which Arjuna, he was the star student of Drona Acharya, third in Acharya. His one name is Savyasachi. You know what that means? Does anyone remember? Prabhupada gives him the explanation. Yeah, actually Prabhupada says he's expert in shooting arrows, but it actually means that one who can shoot arrows with elephants. So one day, Krishna and Arjuna, they went hunting in the forest. They were young ones. And they went hunting with dogs. And then they saw that what happened, they were going hunting and the quarry, the animal that they were chasing, someone else shot. Quarry means the animal that's being hunted. So Arjuna, he was upset. You know, we were hunting this animal. Someone else shot it before us. So they sent their dogs out to find, you know, who is this? The dogs were barking, and all of a sudden the dogs, they got their mouths zipped up with arrows. You have to be pretty expert in shooting arrows to do that. So they found out who had shot the arrows, and it was a young boy from the hunter caste by the name of Ekalavya. So they were impressed with his archery skills, which were maybe better even than Arjuna's. So they asked, you know, where did you learn this expertise in archery? So I learned it from my guru. And who's your guru? And Drona Acharya. And Arjuna said, well, I never decided Drona Acharya. I never saw you being taught by him. So he said, well, actually, I approached Drona Acharya to teach me, but he refused because I'm a hunter in a low caste. So I just made a murti of Drona Acharya in the forest here, and I worshipped him. And as a result of that worship, his knowledge has come to me. So they went and reported this back to Drona Acharya. And Arjuna said that, well, he should give you some, he said to Drona Acharya, he should give you some guru dakshina. So Drona Acharya said, well, what shall we ask him to give? And Arjuna said, we should ask him for his thumbs. And obviously, if your thumbs are cut off, then you can't shoot arrows. So they went back, and Arjuna took his thumbs to Drona Acharya. Back to Ekalavya, he took his thumbs to Drona Acharya. Now, this is, again, generally understood by the Karmis, that Arjuna was envious of Ekalavya. But both his son and his father explained differently, that Arjuna wanted to punish him for being a fraud. The Karmis explained that Ekalavya was a great guru bhakta. But Bhaktisthana Sarasvati Thakur explained actually he was more like a thief. He took the knowledge from Dronacharya without his permission and actually against his sanction. So therefore Arjuna had been punished in this way. So this way Bhakti Santosha Thakur gave many wonderful philosophical insights, so many wonderful properties as well. Yes, I think most of them have some time for questions, so and we have to finish right on time today because there's another seminar beginning at 12:10. I still didn't really tell hardly any anecdotes about Bhakti Santosha Thakur. Taking up all the time in the introduction. And our Acharya is like a great ocean. So, so much for this. Okay, well tomorrow I'll tell some anecdotes. Just some short incidents to demonstrate the personality of the Acharya. I'd also like to speak about some of his leading disciples, or leading another disciple, if there's some. But right now I'll take questions. The father like son, it doesn't mean that they're what's that word that we have this new genetic thing? What's it called? It has to be clone. Doesn't mean it's a clone. Just like you see among the disciples of Prabhupada, you can see that they all had distinct personalities, even though they're all in various ways representing Prabhupada. I was pointing out when I said Prabhupada is our focus on Sushila Thakur, I was pointing out some similarities. But there are important, there are significant differences in approach also. For instance, it appears that Bhaktisthan Sushila Thakur deliberately wrote and spoke in a very complex intellectual manner. One reason being for that, that he wanted to establish that Gaudiya Vaishnavism is not just for uneducated and low-class people. Whereas part of Prabhupada's brilliance was that he was able to put the same very complex and abstruse philosophical ideas in very simple language, which was required for preaching in an absolutely new field where people had no idea of this philosophy. So yes, different acharyas present the same philosophy in different ways according to the time, place, and time. And they also have their own personalities. I'd like to answer that question in, actually it's a thing, you could write a whole book on this, about apparent differences between Bhaktisthan Sushila Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And some people even today claim that Bhaktisthan Sushila Thakur actually was so different from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he deviated from him. He didn't properly present any of those things. So it is, you know, the simmering controversy on these subjects, which doesn't very much affect our preaching in the modern world, because we're saved by the mercy of Bhaktisthan Sushila Thakur, which has come through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. It doesn't really affect that much in India either, that, because it's only a very few people who can still hear the news. But at the time, it was quite a big issue. And there were books written against Bhaktisiddhanta Sushila Thakur. And there's one booklet written in reply by one of Bhaktisiddhanta Sushila's disciples on this point. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sushila Thakur himself wrote an essay in English called Thakur Bhaktivinoda, in which he stated that actually Thakur Bhaktivinoda, there are many people who read his works and studied them, can even quote them line by line, but you don't understand them at all. He had many people who were physically closer to him for many years, but he didn't understand them at all. He said that actually, if you want to understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you have to understand through the Acharya, meaning his sentences. So there are many controversial points. Bhaktisiddhanta Sushila is a very controversial figure. He was a fighter. He spoke out against all kinds of rascals that were killing innocent, and for that he was known as Lion Guru. And there appears to have been at least two attempts on his life. So, as I say, I've written this book, and it's quite a detailed book, but there's so much more to read.